The great cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue. A big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
I think it was like a witness league.
A bit of advice for the players, yeah. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here, and I'll say this will do a little bit early.
Oh, let's head straight back into the time machine because it's 2018 all over again. We're talking sandpaper. Let's just get straight into it.
You want to go?
Let's go straight into it. My name's Ian Higgins. Sam Perry sits across from me and I him. Now, Pez, 2018, here we go again. Cameron Bancroft. I'm not sure if you caught this, so let me just.
Yeah, for those who have not caught this story.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's so much cricket on at the moment. Cameron Bancroft gave an interview with Donald McRae of The Guardian, who you were just telling me is usually a boxing journalist. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The cricket isn't the main beat for Donald.
So how dare he come onto our patch? And in that interview, it was revealed, Cameron Bancroft said that it was probably pretty self-explanatory that the bowlers knew. I've paraphrased his quote exactly there.
After a long pause.
A long pause. He's asked a couple of times, and so this has sort of kicked it off all over again. What was your first reaction when this popped up in the news?
Thanks for asking me that, Higgos.
You're welcome.
Well, I will speak for the nation.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when I read it, when I read the piece.
It was like a big dick reaction. It was like, whoa.
I gasped. Yeah. The nation gasped, I think. Yeah. The nation is shocked and horrified.
Yeah.
Upon this revelation. Have we been lied to?
What?
What? On this issue of ball tampering?
We've said for ages.
I mean, it was such a, when I read the piece, you know, sitting down at home, feet up.
Yeah.
I had a pipe. I was smoking a pipe.
Yeah, okay.
Exhaled.
Yep.
Inhaled and exhaled a thick plume of smoke into the air, reading my Guardian on an iPad. Donald McRae's got an article.
Oh, D-Mac.
Darling.
Darling.
I was talking to my dog.
Donald's on again.
And it was one of those things. He goes, you know, I feel like a few years ago my dad told me.
Yeah.
What'd
he say?
He never forgot. He'll never forget where he was when JFK was assassinated. Yeah. 22nd of November 1963. He was on a bus to Manly or some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two's away.
And Pete Lawler sort of made this analogy, you know, of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Behind this.
Yeah.
Behind this ball tampering issue as well. I'll never forget where I was as well. No.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
Those shots were not consistent with shots from the book depository. So, I mean, mate, I've been reeling since discovering that Cam Bancroft has just insinuated that others knew.
Mm.
Others, I thought it was only, I accepted the official narrative, all cricketers.
Yes, it was the Warren Report.
Mm. I accepted the official narrative. Mm-hmm. Only three of them knew. The rest of them were going about their daily business of being a professional cricketer.
That's right.
And so it's all open again.
Mm-hmm.
And let's rake them over the coals.
Mate.
Yourself?
All this stuff isn't for me, really. I was down the dog track watching the old Dish Lickers race 7.
I can't pay little Marty's rego, but.
Yeah. And I can't look at you when I'm talking to you. Mate, my first reaction to this, I was like, mate, this poor guy, Bancroft, has just been absolutely fucked by the system. He's been fucked so hard and it's so unfair. I've got his quote here that he was talking about. He said in that interview, I invested too much to the point where I lost control of my values. What had become important to me was being liked, being well-valued, feeling really important to my teammates, like I was contributing something by using sandpaper on a cricket ball. That's something I didn't think I even understood until the mistake happened, but it's part of the journey and a hard lesson to learn. He said similar things in 2018 just after this, like in sort of about maybe 4 or 5 months after this he got interviewed, and he sort of said that was part of why it sort of happened, that he that was like his role on the team, but he sort of valued being – Well, he valued being valued in the team to contribute in any way.
Yeah, you can imagine it. I mean, he's a
100%.
Everybody loved him in that side as well. He was a like a lapdog. But when you get into the Australian cricket side, it's like, I will do whatever it takes to help our team win.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude that they try and breed. And it's by and large, it's an admirable quality in a professional sports team. It's like, what do I need to do to go and help us win a game?
Yeah.
Right? And he was happy to do that.
That's right. And so in this interview, he's obviously messed up because, you know, he didn't want to give the answer that he gave.
He's been tied in knots.
Yes, a little bit, yeah. Because he got asked twice and he was like, oh, like the hesitation, you can read the hesitation in his voice.
Well, he's given, and it's probably, no one can blame the interviewer for this, by the way, either. I mean, it's county cricket. He's away from Australia. Mm. He's doing an event, I think a promotional event.
Okay.
This guy gets him and he spends the first three quarters of the interview speaking about his values and honesty.
Yeah, okay.
And so then he's asked the question. Yeah. And, you know, one important part of this, and perhaps we're part of this as well, is like you noted earlier that Donald McRae is a boxing journo.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this the first time these guys have been asked?
Mm.
Why even do, you know, would we be afraid to do that? It is a part of it. Why haven't the other cricket journalists got in on this just yet?
Mm.
And perhaps Bancroft wasn't expecting it, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's basically said, oh, I'm going to be honest. And so he goes, okay, how many other people knew? He's like, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Well, he asked two questions there.
Yeah. He's tied himself in knots
So now I just feel like he's been, you know, it's potential to be dragged over the coals again, you know? Like there's now all the ex-players are talking about their reaction to this. Of course, everyone always knew, blah, blah, blah. That is a sort of a microcosm of this entire thing of like, of course everyone knew. This always happens. Every team was doing it. It's been happening for decades. And the reaction to it or the punishment for it was so disproportionate that people are now confused like, oh, no, we should be taking it really seriously. Okay, they got punished. Let's not talk about it. Let's not talk about how the Ian Roy investigation was conducted, who was asked what, you know, because it's like, oh, because it doesn't really matter that much. But the punishment is one of the worst punishments ever given in the history of the game. But in that in itself has now stopped reverse swing in the everywhere in the world. No one reverse swings anymore. No one, anywhere. Because they're saying like, well, if I get done next, maybe I'll be out for a year. You know, what'll that reaction mean for, what happened to the South African three, if I can call them that, and I can. What happened to them might happen to me next and I don't want to put myself in that position. So now no one is reverse swinging. Obviously swings in England, but there's Ashwin tweeted video of Wasim Akram bowling in like the 90s in a one day game. It's like the 44th over. That thing's fucking going around corners. Hey, he was a good bowler though, to be fair. Just got his wrist behind the ball. My point being that like this has been going on for decades. Australia, what they did was unbelievably stupid. No one's ever said that it wasn't stupid. It was one of the dumbest things you could do. The punishment was outrageous. The cover up around it sort of suggests like, oh, it doesn't really matter. Like we're just going to punish these guys and that'll all be done.
I think it's a really, this is going to be a really interesting little phase. Look, here's the textbook read on this, I reckon.
Hit me.
The Aussies use the sandpaper incident, like CA, use a sandpaper incident to draw a line under 40 years of ugliness, cheating and hostility.
For sure.
That had always been cooking in one way or another.
Right.
And often boiling.
Mm.
And it's kind of understood that Smith, Warner and Bancroft's bans were part of that ritual bloodletting. We needed heads. We needed sacrificial lambs to atone for cultural issues that went back decades.
I agree.
I know the investigation was very narrow or into ball tampering, but ultimately the bans and the punishment, when we look back, they weren't just about ball tampering.
No, they weren't.
And that's why I think the public has a sense of empathy and forgiveness for the players now. They're like, well, obviously it wasn't about ball tampering. And that's why the rest of the cricket world, at least in terms of the players, are pretty quiet.
Pretty quiet.
because it goes on.
Yeah.
But it now emerges that the very line they drew under it to atone for these for this immorality was concocted using many of the same ingredients of cheating.
Yeah, sure.
But just in a very kind of, I suppose, in a more sort of peripheral, narrow way.
But as we know, we headbutt the line.
And so, yeah, we have a situation where they've employed immorality to atone for immorality.
Yeah.
And so And this is going to be a test for the media a little bit. Like, it's a pretty good story if you're on the cricket beat.
Yeah.
Like, because really, if you just want to look at it at face value, it looks like, according to the official narrative, players were complicit in a lie.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Players are walking around
with
an official narrative out there knowing that that's not the truth. And we've already got managers and stuff coming out, James Erskine saying, well, the way they ran it was bad. So we're seeing a bit of a CAV players thing.
Yeah.
Some nuclear codes are starting to come out.
Fuck yeah.
There are a couple of people with nuclear codes. A
couple of books for the Ashes coming out.
But here's the thing. I know. Who's going to be first to write that fucking book? Guys are at their laptops now. Yeah. If I can get it out.
Yeah. I'll do it.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I wonder if the public thinks the players have suffered enough.
Yeah.
Despite this emergence that they've been complicit in a lie.
Mm.
The public knows they've been hammered enough. It was a circus at the time.
Yeah.
The public's tired.
Yeah.
The public's pretty tired of Sam. And they feel like it was a big, big ritualistic amount of bloodletting.
Yeah.
Their heads rolled down hills.
Like there were some heads
rolled.
Heads
fucking rolled.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big hole. That was Heartbreak Hill. Fucking.
Mate, in terms of a circus, that was a fucking.
Yeah.
That was.
Cirque du Soleil.
That was Cirque du Soleil, bitch.
Not to be confused with that as a name for a circuit.
Circuit du Soleil.
So the public doesn't have an appetite, I think, to turn these guys over again. That's just an early read.
Mm.
And it's not because you can hear people overseas going like, well, that's because the Australians are protecting the Australians. No. We fucking hammered these guys here. So it's not because Aussies want to turn a blind eye or have unstinting love for the players.
Mm.
It's because I think people now have a little bit of education around ball tampering. The ball tampering was just the vehicle for something much bigger.
Mm.
So now Bancroft's coming out going, a couple other guys knew.
Mm.
And if you want to, you can go like, well, they've been complicit in a lie. Let's hole them over again. But people are like, but ball tampering works in a bit of a weird way. Everyone's kind of does it.
Mm.
So do we need to haul them over the coals again for cultural issues?
Mm.
I don't know. Or either that or everyone's just watching AFL, and that could also be true.
That's true. Hey, the D's are playing well this year.
Yeah.
Before, just off air, I was talking about how, no one does the theatre of tragedy better than the States. They're just talking about, JFK and then, 9/11. It's just the footage of that and, museums and fuck it. Make it pretty cool, movies and all that kind of stuff. There's something inherently sexy about Cameron Bancroft putting yellow tape down his pants and the slow-mo footage of it.
The way he hit it like a year 9 kid trying to hide a cigarette, Like his eyes were off his, what I mean? He wasn't even looking into his pants. He was just chewing gum.
And then
trying to divert with his eyes.
Yeah. And then his dad came over, i.e. the umpires, and be like, what do you got there? Oh, it's just my sunglass case.
Exactly.
There's something about it. And then you go into the press conference 2 days before they're laughing about, the summer before they're laughing at Bairstow headbutting Bancroft in a bar in Perth or whatever. Then it sort of all goes round. So there's some sort of narrative, which is really that makes this all sexier somehow because he's caught in the act. Whereas some grainy footage of Atherton putting dirt on a ball or whatever from 1994, whenever that was, is not that good.
Mints, mints. Trescothic mints. It's it was in your mouth.
What's that doing? You know another good one? Afridi biting the ball. That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Or doing a pirouette on the pitch. That's good.
Exactly.
Theatre.
I noticed Duplessis, Faf Duplessis, made comments recently saying, it's quite funny looking back. It does look like an alpha move to try and pick a fight in my towel. It's all the same.
I didn't say that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
The memes that came from that made me laugh. The best joke I heard was that if there had been a fist fight, the first thing to hit the ground would have been my towel. Some people have asked if I intended to be shirtless, but it was pure coincidence.
If you spend 14 hours a day shirtless, there's a good chance statistically. That's good.
Yeah, so it's good. So obviously, mate, there's only, where to from here? Because CA have come out and said if Cameron has more information to deliver, then we're very open.
Yeah.
Putting it back on Bancroft.
Yeah.
Leave Bancroft alone, I reckon, mate, at this point.
Come back to that. I'm just he would have said those comments and when he said them, he would have been.
Yeah, mate. Which one is it? Is it this one?
No.
Depends
what it is.
Wrong,
he would have said the comments that could kick off. And then his phone would have been buzzing the last 3-4 days or whatever, and he'd be like, oh, can I just fucking play for Durham and try and get back into the Australian
team? It definitely
team?
Wasn't a planned interview to start the ball rolling.
He messed up in the interview.
Steve Smith announcing he wants to be captain again.
Yeah, that was less of an accident.
He was caught by an interviewer. Yeah. But that's what a good interviewer does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's no issue with that. Mate, you start to think, how do you... just one other thing as well is, what did they know? The bowlers knew.
Yeah.
There's complexity around that as well, and I don't think anyone really has the appetite to go into the X's and O's of it, but, there are degrees of knew what. They probably knew that they were doing illegal shit to the ball, right?
Yeah.
Did they know they were doing it, to your point, in that dramatic a fashion or in that particular way? Mm. Because the anecdotal suggestion is that, they probably did have this system going on for quite a while, 4-0, and... Yeah. It got changed because they were onto them. And, perhaps it's fuck me, did you have to do it like that?
Mm.
So did they know that, Because your point, if they were ball tampering in a more conventional way, would the punishment have been as bad?
Yeah. Because if it was like Warner, for instance, if he had a bit, you said this yesterday to me, just if he had a bit of tape on his hand, then the cameras were onto him, then he was like, okay, let's move it on to someone else. And Bancroft's I'll do it. Or whatever that situation was. We'll probably never know that granularity. But
when we do, we'll buy that book.
Yeah. Or we can just write a book and it'll be fiction. didn't OJ write a book called If I Did It?
America.
Yeah.
So good.
Blanket. Yeah. America. So good. Anyway, I suppose the point about Bancroft that I'm trying to make in a very long way over the last 20 minutes is that he strikes me, we met him once, twice.
But we've interviewed him once in person, then once over the phone.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. And he just strikes me as like so many of these guys in the Australian team in that they're actually really nice, lovely people. And then once they're put into the environment of Australian cricket, I mean, this is why TGC exists. that's why Sandpaper was so good for us, because it was always going to happen in some way. You keep carrying on like that for decades, it's going to blow up a couple of times. And so he just seems to me like, he does the yoga and he's centered and all that kind of stuff. And during the 2019 Ashes, he was running like yoga meditations before like training sessions and all that kind of stuff. He doesn't strike me as a kind of like alpha fuckwit that like it might be perceived. But that's like so many of these guys in this Australian team. It's like once you get into the system of cricket in Australia, it just seems like, oh, we've got to be really mean. We've got to play really hard cricket. It's like, why? You're playing a character.
When I was in Greece in 2005.
It's exactly
Greece,
the same.
Musical. I was Vince Fontaine. I had to become a perv.
you were method acting for years.
Definitely. but it is like that in cricket, isn't it? Even when you walk through into the dressing room, not saying I pretend for a minute I know what it's like to be an Australian player, but we all actually imbue or like sort of divine how they – like carry on and think, well, that's how you play cricket. And you do, you walk through into the sheds and you go, I'm a certain character now because being ugly and hostile and unpleasant actually assists us in winning a game according to our national doctrine, which can't be questioned.
No, exactly. So that's what he's saying here. He's like, well, that's just my value. That's my role in the team. And that's where I seek value. That's where I get my value. It's like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So this guy's just been sort of caught up. Anyway, I feel bad for him.
It's not about ball tampering, this thing.
It's not about Australian cricket culture.
And the only way to solve it, he goes.
Yeah.
Really, I mean,
what's that,
this is crisis PR 101.
Of course,
really.
Yeah.
And this is what they should have done at the time.
Yep.
Everyone admits it. Just spread the risk.
Same day.
People will remember this ad.
Yeah. We know you're out there.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They've got Bancroft.
They've got him.
That's Ian Roy, flesh him out.
He's coming. I'm coming down.
Hang on a sec.
Hey, who's that?
I'm coming down.
That's Cummins.
Oh, okay.
Stark.
That's Hanscom.
Hazelwood. Sorry, don't worry. This isn't an ad for Kellogg's. But I'd like to see them all come out. Maybe Ryan Pearce can do the photo.
Yeah.
Hands up.
Yep.
Everyone's got their hands
now
up.
Now, that's a team photo.
Across the Australian.
And we're all wearing convict black and white kit.
Cricket diaspora. I think there's another, isn't there that other ad where someone's lost his wallet and he's like, yeah, I'm going to fight you. And then everyone says,
like a Jim Beam ad, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Why don't we get all of Australian cricket to come and put their hands up, because we're all guilty. Yeah. And it should be led by Steve Waugh and Ian Chappell. And it should be done at Bradman's grave.
Oh, fuck yeah.
What I'm saying? And we all put our hands up.
Yeah, we all put our hands up.
An amnesty, if you will.
Mm.
And then we can get on. That's when the bloodletting will be done.
Yeah.
What was the original sin?
Mm.
Probably colonisation.
Probably. So it's England's fault.
Once we become a republic, we'll be able to move past sandpaper.
So I liked I like Michael Clark's comments. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, yeah.
He has a radio show in Sydney, or is it national?
Sydney. Yeah.
And he said, I can tell you now, if you went and grabbed a pen, just a pen, and put a little one somewhere on my cricket bat, on top of the handle, on the edge of the bat, on the toe of the bat, on the face, under the grip, anywhere, just a little number one, I would have noticed. His point being that, like, players know their tools. So, like, if the ball gets thrown back to the bowler, then they'd know that something was going on with the ball.
Yeah.
That was his point. Now I kind of want to play a little game of cat and mouse with Michael Clark's stick.
I want to get his stick.
His stick. Yeah.
And I want to put a one under the grip and see if he notices
it. Notices it, yeah.
I don't think he will.
Yeah. And also I want to make the one a bit like a seven.
Why?
You know those like things on Facebook where it's like three bananas times like one policeman, and then the fourth, then the last one's like, you know, half of one banana, and like the policeman's not wearing a cap.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the same
if
as
you,
that, mate.
If you do this, that means you're a narcissist. That's the answer.
Yeah, David Saker also, he was the bowling coach at the time. He said that the finger pointing is going to go on and on. That's helpful.
Oh, well.
Coach. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's going to go on and on.
Mm.
Cool. All good. All right. That's the sandpaper thing for now. It'll come back in a bit until Australia plays again in 4 years or whenever we play next game.
In the next few hours, someone might just do a tell-all. Just get it done. It's a good time to do it, to get it all out.
Yeah.
Because the D's are going well.
Yeah,
Australians are literally fucking paralysed with AFL and rugby league at the moment.
Yeah, true.
Just get it done.
Get it out there. Now, the captaincy.
Quite funny if you're talking about captaincy. Smith.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the captaincy of Steve Smith.
In an unrelated point.
Yeah. I forget why he lost the job in the first place, but Tim Payne was in the vent, he was giving an interview, and he said he was asked should he get the opportunity to play again
to captain again. Tracy Holmes said, "Should he get the opportunity to captain again?"
And he said, "Yeah, I think so. The time that I played under Steve, tactically, he's as good as you get. I would support him getting that job again if that's what they see fit."
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting because when this news emerged,
yeah,
a few people came back and initially said, "I think his comments have been taken out of context," because there's a difference between saying, "I'd support it if he was made captain,"
yeah,
as in, well, he's not going to. What's Payne going to do? He's not captain anymore anyway. He's not even the side.
Yep. I mean,
it's a pretty benign kind of comment to make. Difference between that and saying, I think he should get the opportunity to captain again.
Yeah.
And so there was a few pieces that ran about Payne endorsing Smith.
Mm.
I think listening to that and reading that quote, that I think that's as good as an endorsement.
The timeline of this was actually just before the Bancroft thing's recirculated, so it's not good. You know,
yeah. And so now that... And what I'm noting is that, like, we're obviously now into a phase of endorsements for the Australian test captaincy, much like the way, you know, the New York Times might endorse a presidential candidate in the US. And I sort of tweeted this last week, but I want to know, you know, like, how many electoral college seats does Tim Payne carry?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because you need 270.
270.
For victory.
Got to get 270.
There's 538 seats out there.
Yeah.
I think Payne doesn't carry that many because he wouldn't be in the team, but he's Pennsylvania. Because I do think if Tim Payne's captain and he does say, I think he should get the opportunity to captain again, I mean, if Tim Payne's got his finger on the pulse of that team, he's literally the captain.
Yeah, he plays.
And so that's, I think that does signal where the sort of cricketing establishment maybe sees it. Because there's a lot of, let's compare the candidates.
Okay.
And we won't give our endorsement yet. We might say which way the tea leaves are blowing and he'll give us an interview, but.
Do we have to donate to this campaign?
Maybe.
We're going to buy the Australian captain.
Yeah, well, take him into a room and show him what happens to JFK.
Yeah.
Back and to the left.
If he doesn't do what we say.
Back and to the left.
And Smith is red state for me.
Yeah.
And Cummins is blue state. Okay. Let's just do it in that binary way. Like Cummins reads Dark Emu. He's on a progressive ticket. Cummins, he's pushing climate change initiatives, you know, foreign aid into India, that kind of stuff. Smith, you know, angel investment, Vodafone ads, big tech, big telco, big business. Also, you know, he actually, with Warner and Bancroft, he said, I didn't want to know. Like, I don't want to know what you're doing, which is basically small government, isn't it? It's like government wants to get out of your pocket, out of your life.
It also reminds me of like the military policy in like the 90s, don't ask, don't tell.
And, you know, this is the thing. I think Australian cricket's inherently conservative. There was a bit, you know, it was reported that the cricket cognoscenti clapped, you know, gleefully upon Payne saying what he said at the Great Chapel dinner. So
I got two things with this, Pez. First of all, can Australia just play some fucking games? Because I'm already so fucking bored of this. Yeah. Like, also, second thing, like, do you reckon Payne's like, hey, guys, I'm still captain, by the way, you know?
Yeah.
It must be weird for him. I don't care.
Yeah.
At the moment, I don't care. Like, if I had to choose, and I don't, but I will. Cummins would be my guy. He's so obviously the best leader in that team, in every capacity. In the sense of, well, I don't know what he's like tactically. They played some one day games for New South Wales or whatever. Smith's a probably fine captain on the field strategically. That's or something, thing. But it's off the field stuff. Even Cummins like donating 50K. During the India COVID crisis. And he obviously donated the money originally to a troublesome...
it was the PM Cares
That's right.
Foundation, yeah. Which had many said lacked transparency and may right. have been filtered through to Modi's campaign.
That's right, that's right, that's right. And then
allegedly.
And then he removed that and he put it through UNICEF, right? So, like, even the nice gesture, made a mistake, withdrew, did it, you know? Like, he's just got his finger on the pulse. It's just so obvious. Callan made this point last week in an interview. He was like... What are we doing here, guys? Is obviously the best captain of the team.
Yeah, but now, he bowls, mate.
Yeah, well, exactly. He's a bowler. And that seems like that's the only issue. It's the only issue. I mean, mate, as I said, I don't care. Tim Payne's the captain. He's going to play in the Ashes. This is a later issue. And I think this is really only coming about because Australia ain't playing.
Mm. It's a bit of a I think it is a little bit of a like a summit on what's Australian cricket about, though. I mean,
yeah,
I think in
true.
Like the higher circles, Smith will be the favourite because Australian cricket likes what they know.
Yeah, you that's know? True. That's
I
true.
Think doing something new or departing from convention is tough for Australian cricket and Australia. Mm. You know, generally speaking.
Mm.
I think he'll have a lot. I think Smith will have a lot of supporters, and I think a lot of people will say, you know, we need our bat. The best bat to captain. It's a bit of a redemption story for him.
Yeah.
Cummins is going to be untrustworthy with injury.
Yeah.
And I don't think... And here's the thing about Steve Smith as captain. If Steve Smith becomes captain, like I'd say good luck to him. I'll be happy for him as a person.
All good. Yep.
And I think he'll probably do a fine job.
Yep.
He'll do a fine job.
I agree.
I think it might be a missed opportunity.
I agree.
For Cummins and the direction of Australian
cricket.
I think that's
the point.
I think he is a better... And I think it will be an example of not learning from mistakes. You know, it is insanity. Repeat the same thing twice.
Yeah.
I've learned a bit about Steve Smith.
Yeah.
But I support him 100%, and he'll probably do a fine job as captain.
I think I said this last year, but I feel like if sort of going back to the punishment thing again, especially with Bancroft, it's like if Steve Smith didn't get it, it's going to be like he's being punished again, you know, because it's like it's almost his inheritance to get it, to get it back, you know, and it's like I don't think it'd be harsh for him to be punished again because he's been through enough. Mm. Like what happened with him being followed in New York and fucking front page, him having a beer by himself, that kind of bullshit, being escorted out by like 70 police officers in South Africa. It was a fucking disgrace. It was so poorly handled that. And I felt so bad for him. And then, you know, then obviously gets memed by crying.
But
you know,
what could Cummins be? What about the opportunity for Australian cricket?
But that's my point. And I agree with you. If Smith got it back, it'd be fine. But the missed opportunity, I still think they'd be carrying on.
I'd be happy for Smith.
I think I would be as well. And I think, but they'd still be carry on. I can still see carry on. Under Cummins, I see less carry on. And that's a great opportunity to like, it's almost fork in the road stuff, isn't it? You can diverge down this path of like, let's try this for a bit.
But what if Cummins gets injured? Oh no, let Smith be captain.
Yeah.
I mean, it just change the model. Mm. Oh, but Cummins will be blowing hard after bowling four or five overs and you can't tactically be there. All right, get someone else to do it.
Mm.
I know that might be easier said than done, but like we're very rigid here in Australia around the way captaincy can actually happen. I mean, these guys are all like their footy, their AFL.
Mm.
You know, they have co-captains
everywhere.
That's right,
yeah.
You know,
leadership
just do it. Yeah, do a you know. Hey, D's are playing well.
Hey, Pez. England are set to announce their squad for the New Zealand series. now we spoke to Barney Ronay.
Yes.
In a moment's time, who covers this more in depth than we ever possibly could. But this series is. It's going to be a bit of a shame, isn't it? Because it's potentially a great series, and England are set to play a second string side. I suppose the main concern, we spoke to Barney, who you'll hear from in a moment's time. But I reckon the more troublesome thing of this is that Jofra is injured and he's out of that New Zealand series. He's got this elbow issue. He's going to have elbow surgery. Ah, man, I worry about that. I worry about Jofra. Like he's missed heaps of games. and this elbow injury is like real troublesome. And I want him to play out here. Do you want him to play out here?
Mate, could probably struggle to name a player I want to see out here more.
Yeah.
In, you know, world cricket.
You know, like in the 90s, 2000s, when there was that era when like the West Indies would come out and you're like, you'd go to a game and you're like, I want to watch Brian Lara bat.
Yeah.
Sachin, whatever. Graham Smith, less so.
Yes.
With respect.
Big back.
But like in terms of a bowler to come out here, who was the last bowler he'd be like, fuck, I want to go see him bowl?
The first person in my head is Alan Donald.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit of White Lightning.
White Lightning, yeah.
Is that
something? Yeah. Is that something?
Mm. As I say it, I'm thinking, necessary?
Mm.
Alan Donald, but I mean, that was a while ago. Why is that first person in my head?
Because you started watching cricket in 94.
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone from England I've ever wanted to watch bowl. I don't think there's anyone from India I've ever, like, really wanted to watch bowl.
Devin Malcolm had some raps on him.
Yeah, yeah. They loved him. But I think still, at the time, they were beta England.
Yeah.
And so what, like, are the teams out there? South Africa, yeah, Pakistan. Spain, I don't Pakistan. Think I ever wanted to go and see was him or Waka kind of thing.
It's funny because even like Morley.
They're just Aussie bowlers.
Even Morley, I was like, yeah, I was like, nah.
I think when Warne is in your side, here. You're like, well, Warne's the guy I want to see. Yeah. How about Warne?
Yeah. And Mark Waugh bowling in sunglasses. Bit of that.
They're the two. They're the two.
Shane Warne, Mark Waugh. Third maybe was in Macram.
Is it? I feel like, and we're going to talk to Barney soon, but I feel like one of the reasons Jofra is so important, apart from just being amazing
King.
As a player,
yeah.
is
and he gave you a birthday message last year.
He's a character. Like he's so magnetic as a player.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
And we're afraid. We will be afraid of him because of raw pace, what he did at the Oval to Steve at the Oval at Lords to Steve Smith.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Marnus coming in after, just badging that shit.
Yeah.
He's someone who can go through Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think England need that kind of magnetic character that you know, they've got it in Stokes a little bit. He'll be interesting to watch out here because he missed it last time.
Yeah.
He smashed somebody. And
yeah.
So those two guys, if those two guys are there, awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. All right, well, let's get Barney on the phone. Who uses phone anymore? It's 2021. He's on a Zoom. Here he is, Barney Ronay.
Okay, we've got the chief sports writer at The Guardian with us now. Taking a step up from last week where Ali Martin's the chief cricket correspondent and he called us YouTube people. And we knew what he was saying there when he was saying that.
Did
so,
he say that?
Yeah, he did. So, okay. So we thought we'd get Barney Ronay onto the show. Barney, welcome back to The Grad Cricketer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Barney, the question that's no doubt hot on the lips of all English cricket followers at the moment. It's not the FA Cup. It's Cameron Bancroft's comments overnight and their receipt in the UK. I was hoping you could speak for all English cricket followers here. Would I be right in thinking that that what he said is simply a hit of pure morphine for the body politic, convinced of Australia's inherent villainy, and this will now be another story of how bad we really are?
I don't know if there's really anywhere to really go on. I'm not sure there's any room for movement on that. I mean, there may be a kind of confirmation aspect, but I'm not sure it's going to increase or further kind of demonize David Warner in any way. I mean, I think probably we see that whole incident differently over here. I still find it funny that there's any kind of debate about who was responsible. And I think looking at it from here, you just see a situation where David Warner and Steve Smith and quite obviously the bowlers have made this young bloke who's new in the team do something, and he's been punished for it. If there's any kind of debate about whether this, you know, this one rotten apple came into the team and single-handedly decided to tamper with the ball as a batsman, having not checked this with the bowlers first, I mean, it's kind of absurd. All you really see from this end is that David Warner's done something really bad and he's still playing for Australia and everything's fine. Whereas the other guy's forced to kind of drop tiny hints in interviews that maybe it wasn't him. I mean, he didn't actually say anything, did he? He kind of just said, well, what do you think? and I think if it wasn't for the fact that he wants to play for Australia again, I think we'd probably be getting the full story. He didn't really say much, but what he said was kind of significant.
He said it all. He said it all. Yeah, Barney, let's talk about this England New Zealand Test series, which is coming up. Now, there's a bit of talk about who is going to play. England might play a second string side, if that's even fair, which it isn't. But you've just taken shots to Australia, so let's give it back.
Yeah.
I'm reading that Ollie Robinson, James Bracey might make debuts. Would that be fair to say?
Well, there seems to be a fair chance of that happening, which, I mean, for me, I find incredibly disappointing, and I don't really understand what's happening there. I mean, England have an amazing-looking run coming up. You've got the world number one team, the world number two team, and then, of course, everything must be shadowed by the Ashes at all time. But that genuinely is around the corner, so we can talk about it. And for some reason, they want to play fringe players, and the talk is that the most important issue is that they're going to stop using the word bubble. I don't know if you've seen this. They're going to talk about team environment instead, because the word bubble is apparently bad for morale, and the players are struggling with this, the use of this word. And I look at, I just think you've got an organization so obsessed with presentation and kind of marketing speak and spin that they're literally confusing that for reality in their own emotional life. What's important is we stop talking, using the word bubble. And by the way, let's play some fringe players when we've got this fantastic test summer coming up. I find it, pretty disappointing.
The sort of passing of the new potential new players aside, like, I mean, do you support England's project here to confect what seems to be their aim to create the deepest pool of test players we've ever seen without any of them actually playing too often?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And it's coincided with getting rid of Ed Smith and basically say we don't need that guy. We already have millions of players who we can look at, and we just need to say maybe you guys over there, it's time you had a game. I'm disappointed to see Ed Smith go. It's very confusing what he was actually doing. I never quite understood. It seemed to be a mix of kind of data and, you know, modern stuff, and also feelings. Like, I wasn't sure what it was. Is it feelings or data? It was very strange. He was supposedly modern, but he also looked, you know, like the fourth Earl of Sandwich. And there was this kind of the photos of him with England players, it almost looked like cropped. It's like the ghost of James Joyce is standing next to Joe Root, making him feel uncomfortable. But this is modern. We're doing something modern here with data. I never understood it, but I quite liked it. And it seemed weird and interesting, but they got rid of that.
It's like Ashley Cole's photo when he went to Roma. He's like just about 3 feet to the side of the team. Yeah, yeah.
So Barney is treating New Zealand as a pre-season trial. Does that send a more insulting message to New Zealand, who are in the World Test Championship final and the world number one team, or the World Test Championship itself, as England are evidently disputing the premise that New Zealand are even worth their best effort?
Yeah, it's insulting to the format. It's insulting to New Zealand. It's kind of insulting to all the people who watch as well. It's probably insulting to the players a bit, in that we're going to just play a second team rather than getting you into the first team because we think you're good. I don't understand it at all. And it's frustrating because just if you sort of squint a bit, England actually have quite a clear, distinct team there. It's been a weird time. Under Ed Smith, I don't really know who England's number three is. I don't know who the wicketkeeper is. And these are really just, you know, you need to know who these people are. At any given moment, I need to know who England's openers are. And I don't know who that is. There are various disgruntled people who seem to be the wicketkeeper. There are angry people who may be the number three. I'm not sure. I don't know who the bowling attack is. And they have got a chance to kind of rectify that. Because if you squint a bit, you could put Ben Folkes in. You could have You could have Jack Leach as just a really boring spinner who doesn't really do much. You could have the captain at four. Ollie Pope's a great number five. He fields a short leg. He kind of, you know, he's promising. Ben Stokes, classic number six. You know, you could have this quite fixed team that makes sense. But instead it's weirdness, feelings, data, and fringe players.
It sounds like you're pining for just a sort of safety. You know, you're just looking for safety in something you recognise in the side.
Yeah, but sort of now we've had such a weird, I don't know what month it is, what year, what's going on, true, where we are in the cycle.
Yeah.
And I want to see not the kind of slightly perverted Dom Sibley style test batting where you're literally just going to bat all day and Joe Denny's going to face 100 balls because we're being slow now. Just sort of something proper and recognisable, and like it's 1987.
Yes,
everything's okay.
And everything's okay. So just on the bowling depth, Barney, it is, you know, it's amazing. And then you list it all out: Anderson, Broad, Archer, Wood, Wokes, Curran, Ollie Robinson, Craig Overton. So they're all good, but each of them seems to possess like one weakness that prevents them from playing every game. Yeah. I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, so then therefore you have to change. So Wood is like a horse for a certain course. Ollie Robinson's the same. Archer's injury plagued, and we need to manage and use him. Anderson and Broad are too old to play together all the time. Is the idea that we get used to just different combinations every test match, regardless of form? Is that what we're looking at?
That seems to be the case. I mean, I think it's massive overthinking. Everyone is fragile. Everyone is about to die or become injured if they play too much. The one thing that's bad for them is cricket. But unfortunately, they have to play cricket. Yeah. There's this strange, it's a paradox we can't resolve. Your job is to play cricket, but cricket is bad for you.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like, they're like the scientists in Chernobyl trying to fix the reactor. It's going to kill them, but how much can we get out of them before they melt? But I do think it's definitely the case with Archer. I don't really know what the answer is there, because it doesn't. I know he was really badly managed on the New Zealand tour and bowled too many overs, but he does seem to pick up this elbow injury again and again, and he's so good, and you don't want him. There is some part of me that wants him to just say, I'm just going to play the white ball stuff, because he's so good at it, and I feel they're going to kill him. Although, surely we can get one tour of Australia. Surely. Yeah. I mean, everyone wants to see that. Oh, yeah.
100%. 100%. It's also enjoyable when they just put out some PR stuff of him bowling to second 11 players.
Yeah, that's right. Who can't see it.
This is way too good for me. Yeah. Barney, I want to ask you, I mean, like, it is interesting when you go through, when you map out this huge 12 months for England cricket where they're playing 85 tests, there's white ball stuff, the IPL players, blah, blah, blah. And they're 1-0 up in India, and they're like, nah, let's rotate, because we don't really worry about winning this stuff. New Zealand, big test series. New Zealand's first time there
next
in
thing,
ages.
Now
it's the next thing. The Ashes around the corner. We've got injuries. Like, what are England actually trying to achieve this 12 months? What are you guys trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's not enough jeopardy. I think maybe people don't feel that they can be fired. And maybe that will change with Chris Silverwood suddenly being the chief selector. Because when you just need to win, or, you know, that's when you tend to, it can create sort of unhealthy team environment, and people get stretched thin, and, you know, terrible things happen, like teams fall apart. But that's what sport is, and that's what the jeopardy is. And you're just pushing to win every game. It seems somehow more honest in itself. I don't really know. Obviously, things have been geared towards going to Australia, but I don't feel that they're anywhere closer to understanding what the team or the approach should be for that, by sort of faffing around in all these other games, picking fringe players. But they don't have that many games to go. I mean, they're going to have to hurry up and decide what's going on here.
Just finally, from me, Barney, I don't know if it's on a positive note or not, but if we look at Ollie Robinson, Craig Overton, James Bracey, and Ben Foulkes, who would potentially be playing his first test in England, do any of those, you know, gird your loins? And if so, why or how?
I mean, not really. There's a big sort of fashion in this. People get really talked up, you know, you get really talked up until it doesn't really work out, or you're just okay, and then you get massively talked down. At the moment, people seem to be going about Craig Overton like he's being really rebuilt into this. I got Craig Overton's back. you know what Craig is. Craig is like a decent kind of big guy who runs in and hits the wicket, a decent number nine. But he's now being taught, he's put on a yard of pace. He must go to Australia. Well, I mean, there's a cyclical thing. They'll all be okay. No one is as good as James Anderson. Broad will play, you know. It's the same stuff, but we have to go through this for some reason.
Well, thank you for that synopsis, that summary, Barney. That was enlightening and inspiring.
I'm sorry not to sound more positive. I should have said more positive things.
No, you shouldn't.
No, they're great. They're a great crop of young players. There's a flowering going on, a generational thing. And if we can just manage the team environment, not bubble, there's a new dawn. A brave new dawn is breaking.
And Ben Foulkes is very good looking.
He is a handsome man.
Now, Pez, last week we had a wonderful remix sent in by one of our patrons, actually, Ben Rowles, who did the Lizzo remix. That was not you or I. contributing that. So I should have shout out Ben. And that is going to be on our Patreon as well. In fact, it already is on our Patreon. The actual track itself that Ben put together, that's on our Patreon, patreon.com/greatcricketer. We had another one that you drew my attention to this morning, which has been retweeted on our Twitter account, from Tom Gain, who said, cricket was rained off, so I made this instead of doing anything actually useful. I'm going to play that in a moment's time, just before we speak to James Vince. But of course, none of this would be doable.
Mm.
You could do it, but it'd be like, why? Without Budgie Smuggler.
Indeed. And those who have caught Barney Ronne on Zoom will have seen he was wearing a t-shirt and a little vest over the top of that.
Little vest.
But it just strikes me that the sun might be starting to come out in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear negative things about this particular season in the UK. It might be cold, it might be rainy at this point.
Because we just went through La Nina this year.
Right.
Where it rains more.
Right. That does not all go well for the UK, unless they'd already gone through it. And we do know that fashion hits the UK before Australia, many years before. And if the weather's anything like that, then they've already had La Nina.
I had this thought the other day, actually, in regards to fashion, that like when I went to, I did a big like Euro trip maybe less than 10 years ago. And when you go over there, you go like, oh, I'm going to go to Paris and like, go to some like sort of boutique-y shops and like, you know, get some fucking Paris kit, right? Get some fucking Paris kit.
Yeah.
And then you go there and it's like, oh no, it's like H&M's just everywhere. It's like, there are no boutique stores anymore.
Yeah.
It's all just.
Oh, there are. You just probably just don't know where they are. Which arrondissement were you in? You must have been sort of home around 8 to 12. Yeah. Shut the fuck up, man.
Yeah.
With Budgie Smuggler,
mm.
If you do have the chance to get your kit out a little bit.
Some fucking Paris kit in you.
Mm. You can get custom bucket hats,
yeah.
Custom smugglers, and what the great people at Budgie Smuggler, an Australian-owned, Australian-made company, are going to offer.
Mm.
If you're sent by TGCs, you're going to get free design on those custom bucket hats. That normally costs you about 50 quid, $100.
Yeah.
You're saving. It's an immediate saving.
Yeah.
If you use the code CHAMP.
You're actually making money.
It's a custom bucket hat, custom smugglers and smuglets.
Mm-hmm.
Use the code CHAMP at checkout. That's what the great people at Budgie are going to do. So that might save you the trip to H&M in Paris if you're there.
Which you won't be.
As our platform suggests, at least two or three of you are. At least. This is targeted advertising.
Yeah, exactly,
Lenny from
yeah.
Budgie said, listen, can we just really drill in on the Parisian listeners?
Yeah, that's what he said. That's what he said.
In the 8th to 12th arrondissement.
It's now, people who have listened to us for a while, years in fact, would know that Budgie Smuggler have been such a big supporter of ours. The most important thing in that capacity is that they're fucking great people and they're doing really well.
Mm.
And they're supporting us. And so we're trying to help their audience as well, and also you guys out there saving a bit of cash. So
some of the great swimwear, some of the great apparel, you can put your own design on it, whatever that design might be.
Whatever.
You know, it could be JFK back into the left. Now, that would be a little bit on the nose, I would have thought. A little bit.
Tragedy plus time.
Still having someone actually being shot live on a hat, I'm not sure.
Zapruder film stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't go for that.
Wasn't Bill Hicks saying that the only way that Lee Harvey Oswald could have got him out of the book depository there is if he was hanging by a rope with his shoes, by his shoes to get the angle? But they don't let you. They can let you go up there, but they don't let you actually see out there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, it's like who else knew? Just like who else knew about the ball tampering?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think a bucket hat of only three knew. I mean, actually, we might release some merch like that.
What about Lee Harvey Oswald with wearing a T-shirt like from The Simpsons when he just says, "I didn't do it."
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah.
That's creative.
Say the line.
Say the
line.
Kind of
like boys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where is it? Where is it, Pez?
Budgiesmuggler.com.au.
James Vince, here he is. Here's the great man. I'm sorry that I missed your party. I wish I had a better excuse. I can't even lie. You got me. I was busy thinking about boys.
Boys.
What? Boys!
I was busy dreaming about boys!
Boys!
My head is spinning thinking about
boys! I received a message from a guy asking if I wanted to go to his and have a threesome with him and his boyfriend. They were attractive enough and they caught me in the right mood, so to speak. Making my way into the house, I found them both in the living room. For some inexplicable reason, the greeting I chose was to bellow out, "Boys!"
I was busy thinking about
boys.
Boys!
Boys!
I was busy dreaming about
boys.
Kane!
Boys!
I was busy thinking about
boys!
Boys!
Boys! Boys!
I was busy dreaming about
boys!
Well, a little note here. You're expecting to hear James Vince's voice right here in this moment, but unfortunately, James had a change of plans. We're going to record him this afternoon, Australia time, but he has had a change in his schedule, and so we're going to record him later on in the week, and he'll be on next week's show.
Fuck!
Pez has just walked in the room to contribute that bit. So yeah, big apologies that Vincey, as I call him, is my best friend, has pulled out today. But he'll be on next week's show, as we say. So yeah, sorry about that. But we'll roll on to hashtag AskTGC. Here we go. All right, Theo Durden writes in hashtag AskTGC. Dear Higgy Pop and Pesky Father Issues. Pesky Father Issues? Is that pesky?
He's got pesky father issues. God, they're a bit pesky, those father issues. I certainly find my father issues pesky.
Exactly.
That's how he finds them.
Theo says,
"Boys,
I have a dilemma. Pubs are opening here in Guernsey on Monday, so my housemate and I excitedly discussing what we were most looking forward to about getting back to normal life." I forget when this came in a little while ago. "Enjoying our first pint back, seeing the boys, and then we remembered that we would be able to play pool again. We have a healthy rivalry, but I tend to have the upper hand." Do you?
Okay.
"I am bad at actual sport, so instead of bringing pride to my family, I have spent my Saturdays, Sundays, and most weeknights honing my craft, as is my wont. Now, I would say that I am the strong favourite to beat my admittedly below average housemate, who actually spends most of his time at a job, which he enjoys, and pursuing the arts, which he is very good at. The issue I have is that when we brought up pool, he said, 'When I win, I'm going to champ you.' Our house has a ban on champing, with a 10 quid penalty for a deliberate champing and a £5 for an accidental one. So this is a big fucking deal." I need to dissect that. "My question is this: if I win, do I champ him? Our housemates will be waiting for it, as I have been deliberating with the house about what to do on Monday since the pre-champing occurred. Do I simply not say anything and let my silence speak a million words? If I do this, will my housemate have effectively champed himself? How silly is Butler's voice? Cheers."
Fucking Ronnie O'Sullivan here.
Has Butler got a weird voice?
Don't know.
The only thing I think about that is, like, I think I said this to you in the past. I remember when Beckham was like in his peak, like peak hot Beckham. The brand Beckham.
What now?
Yeah.
It's a real fucking sweet treat right
now.
Yeah,
true, true. Depends what you like. But
true.
Like Beckham when he was still playing, okay? Like maybe Madrid days. Yeah, he was playing for Madrid at the time. And then people were being like, yeah, his voice though. How fucking hot do you have to be before you have no flaws? Like David Beckham. And people would be like, don't like his voice. What? What's that?
It's a paradox. It's impossible.
Who says that without revealing some deep insecurities about themselves?
It's like somebody.
Not me.
It's like somebody giving us a review on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we're hot like Beckham. Our podcast is as good as Beckham's hotness.
Yeah,
wouldn't dream of it. Wouldn't go near it. He's a real sweet treat.
He's a sweet treat. He's a sweet treat.
As far as I'm concerned, across he can adapt his looks across age, across styles, across generations.
Mm. Mm.
But yeah, people say, you know, really love the show. Listen every single week. Here's one problem with it: 1 star out of 5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. It's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same. So,
now, Pez, when Theo said, our house has a ban on champing with a £10 penalty for deliberate champing and a £5 for an accidental one, so this is a big fucking deal. How can you accidentally champ someone?
This is what I want to know. I mean, what preceded this fine? You know, because when you have to create laws and regulations to I guess, condition behavior, it means something's gone wrong.
Something has gone wrong.
How bad could something be to be forced to institute fines?
There must have been another housemate living there previously and they champed him out of the house. That can happen. That actually can happen.
You just get so badly champed, you're like, oh, I've got no choice but to leave. Or is it the other way around? It's like a sexual misdemeanor in politics where you're obliged to resign.
I guess.
Could you champ somebody? See, I've got to, you've got to offer your resignation now.
When I was living in the UK, I lived with a guy who his previous housemate had just moved out. And then the reason why that guy kicked him out was because there was like a hallway mirror. And obviously it's the UK, so it's all like carpet. Actually, the carpet is actually irrelevant. But he used to like shave in front of that hallway mirror and just leave his like fucking beard. What the fuck is that?
Clippings.
His clippings, yeah. No, Manscaped's next week. We should talk about that.
That's right. But I need to scope.
but what's that? You're living in a share house or like you're living with a flatmate and they're shaving in the hallway and just leaving the clippings on the floor? Mm. What the fuck is that? That's see you later. That's get out of here territory. Champing, similar to that for mine. When was the last time you were champed? Do you remember?
You know what? We have I'll be careful what I say here because I've told some other stories about family and stuff and they get back.
Yeah.
But we've had a paint around recently, or a real handyman, Pete the Handyman, lovely fella.
Mm.
And my 3-year-old loves him.
Yeah.
And he comes in and he's like, he's barrel chested, he's great around the house.
Mm. Alpha's jovial?
The absolute shit out of me. But you know what? And he kills me with kindness.
But that's what people who are like, who are masculine, mate, they do like hands on jobs. They're just alpha.
He's fantastic. He's such a great guy.
Yeah. What do you do?
And he fixes stuff and he fucking kills me. But
Yeah,
my son loves him. Pete the handyman's going over. Yeah. That's great. It's really great.
Yeah.
But he often when he's a happy go lucky guy,
right.
Very good at his job. Yeah. And then his son in law does stuff as well. It's great.
Nice.
But whenever he leaves, he's like, see you, champion. Oh. He's like, fuck. What? What the fuck did you say? But it's one of those Sydney Rugby League champions. And he's from, there is a way. Yeah, there is a different.
Soft on the palate.
Exactly. You're a champion.
Yeah.
You have to say the full champion.
I like the whiplash you got there. Yeah. Champion. Oh,
fuck.
Oh,
Tori, Jesus. My wife, just like beams a smile at me. What's he going to do now? Don't you say a word to me.
Don't you say a fucking word. speaking of culture.
And the housemate stories. I remember I lived in a house with 3 other blokes. Great time, 25 years old. And I got a call at work from one of them like, oh, we've been robbed. Did you leave the window open? It's like just started the interrogation before I had a chance to even know what was going on.
Yeah.
I didn't.
How'd you know?
I didn't. But you know, time to come home. We'd survey the damage. It wasn't that bad. But I had the room downstairs and they all had rooms upstairs. And so I got in and like basically it was all my stuff that was gone. But it was like a laptop and
flashlight.
Like a change. And yeah. Anything else? Yeah. My electric drum kit. I had a wet West Wing box set that actually just had porn in it. No, I was just joking about that.
One-use sock.
It was like a chain. I had change in a box or something. And like, so there was a bit of money there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I thought I had a leather jacket stolen, but my mate had just stolen it from me.
Just wearing it around the house.
But I had this laptop stolen and like, we were sort of, licking our wounds at the end of the night. Like, no one else had lost anything, and I was like, you know what? Like, I cop a lost laptop. I'd just been keeping a journal on it and I probably had about 150 pages on it.
Fuck.
And my mate goes, you backed it up, didn't you?
Yeah, that helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. Yeah. He's like, you should have backed it up.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks very much, mate.
Mate, I remember when I was living with my parents, I had to move like some, I was like scaffolding sort of framework because we had this thing in a garage. Mm. And I helped my brother-in-law came around to help her move it. And it's like really heavy, big like sort of steel beam. And I dropped it on my foot and I was barefoot.
Oh.
And I had to go to the hospital. It was fucking so painful.
See where this is going.
Dropped it on the foot.
Yeah.
Blood everywhere. Fucking toes like,
yeah.
Fucking 90 degrees. Mum's like, oh, should have been wearing shoes. So good,
isn't it? But this mate of mine, like it was like he after he got robbed, he was kind of desperate to have, like, had something stolen. I don't know what it was. Like,
yeah,
we were like sort of commiserating over a beer at night.
Right.
And then he goes, they've stolen my Batman game that was in that I was playing on PlayStation walks in holding, he's like, it was inside the FIFA case. And he goes, big pause. He goes, lucky I finished it last night. And then the final one was, I'm like, oh, I think I've lost about, yeah, he just does it again. I'm like, I think I've lost about $1,000 worth of stuff, you know, which at 25, it's not a small amount. You know?
Yeah, didn't miss.
And,
yeah.
He goes, you've got home and contents insurance, don't you? I'm like, no, mate.
I'm 25.
I'm like, mate, do you? He's like, no, but it'd be good to get it. I love you, Muzza, if you're listening.
I don't have a fucking dental. I've got home and contents insurance,
Anyway.
Hope that helps.
Does that help? yeah. All right. So on my phone here. Max Bloom. Max
Bloom. Do you mind a radio if it's...
Oh, I got it. It starts in capitals. Please analyze my dream. Dear hashtag AskTGC, you tend to bring up how cricket can impact all of our subconscious and ingrain itself in the deepest and darkest corners of our minds. I recently had a dream about said sport, for which I can only seek explanation from two strangers on the internet. The dream was as follows. Formal commencement. I was in a house. I do not know where or whose house it was, just that it wasn't mine. There were various people from different social groups, some of whom were my mates and some I have no idea, but the one who stands out and who I was with is my best mate's stunner of an ex-girlfriend. What is also important is that I think we must have been owners of different IPL teams and for some reason we were bidding on players despite not being at the auction itself, but rather at this party. I don't remember too much about what we were talking about, but we were on a couch getting quite close. Then for some reason, Sydney Sixers legend Dan Christian was up for auction and the minimum bid you could place on a player was $50 million.
Jesus Christ.
However, she could only afford a measly and very specific $31 million. I first thought, how old is this guy? Anyway, for my unspecified team, I bid $50 million for Dan. Brackets, we were clearly on a first name basis before she could place her measly $31 million bid. After careful consideration, I decided to rescind my bid. Can you even do that? In hopes that it would improve my chances, and Dan went to her for $31 million. This act of selflessness clearly put me into a new light, and I proceeded to make out with my best mate's ex before the other people came into the room, and then I woke up.
Holy shit.
What does this all mean? Is the Asian century already so dominant that their domestic league has already taken over my dreams, and this is just something we have to live with? Why was it Dan Christian who was up for auction? And why did I let him go for possible romantic action with my best mate's ex-girlfriend, who I clearly want to chop?
Oh,
why
God.
Is this happening to me? Thanks, boys. What does that mean, he goes?
Jesus Christ. I just want to make sure that Max said, don't keep this anonymous. It doesn't say that. So I hope his mate doesn't fucking listen to this. Mm. Oh, well, we've
still. He might have a few mates with good looking girlfriends, so it narrows it down.
Good point. Now, what I want to dissect here is, Pez, is that they're at an auction and he's gone first. He goes 50 million and she goes 31.
Wow. It's a very autistic read. Of all the things that have gone on, it's like, well, I actually got the chronology of the auction beating wrong. Does that have a meaning, do you think?
I don't know. Now, this would obviously come on the back of, I presume, actually, I don't know when this was sent in. This might have come on the back of. He said Sydney Sixers legends. This is before RCB got involved in TGC shit.
Yeah, where we were betrayed.
But look, Christo is worth $50 million in my opinion. Depends what for. I suppose he's picked up for $31 million to get a kiss from his mate's ex-girlfriend. So
a kiss.
Pretty wet.
They were making out. They were kissing.
There wasn't even any heavy petting. It's a phrase I don't really understand.
That's how my dad... introduced a conversation about sex with me.
Okay.
When I was younger.
Yeah.
It was more, don't have sex because of diseases, but you can do heavy petting. Hi, Dad. Dad doesn't know how to work podcasts. Because of diseases.
Yeah, because of diseases.
Mm.
Well, only one of us has got kids. Yep. All right. Well, do you want to break that down? Or?
Well... It's not adultery per se, but he's dreaming about cheating in a way, on his mate.
Mate's ex-girlfriend.
I put it in a theme of adultery. Adultery symbolizes, in dreams, adultery symbolizes betrayal, but often betraying yourself. It's betraying yourself. And I'm noting that they're covering the IPL and he's talking about the Asian, because dreams are about a dialogue. Even the way he explains it might give insight into how his subconscious is working.
Okay.
And he's like, have they infiltrated my dreams? And I'm wondering, because we, you know, have been contending with a lot of these barbs, you know, does he feel like he's betraying himself supporting the IPL at all?
Oh,
you know,
is
in the Asian
yeah.
century.
Oh,
is,
yes.
He's nodding and pivoting himself to the Asian century.
Yeah.
He's bidding on it. And he's prepared to put in the maximum bid. Well, it's the minimum for Dan Christian, but he wants to outbid.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if he feels like he's betraying himself and his mates by even following the IPL.
That's interesting.
Yes, it's playing out through wanting to chop his mate's ex-girlfriend, which evidently he just actually wants to do.
Yeah.
And that might be what's going on. Yeah. What is this? He's like, well, he thinks Dan Christian's a good player and he wants to chop his own sex.
Could be black and white.
Pretty black and white, you know? And his dream stopped when people walked in the room because he knows that's wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if it's more like, Sundar's done what he's done. He's named his dog Gabba.
Mm.
And now we're all starting to have dreams like, oh, the Asian century's really coming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Starting to bid on stuff because Dan Christian is a real figure of like Australian T20 cricket, isn't he?
Mm.
You know? Mm. Anglosphere T20 cricket.
Mm.
Goes over to the IPL, not as easy.
Mm.
You know, starts getting embroiled in controversies with RCB and the great cricketer, TGC.
Jamison's just sitting there.
And Kyle Jamison.
What Chris is about. Telling a story about him while he's sitting there.
About Jamo disagreeing with Virat Kohli's proposition.
Don't say too much.
Don't say too much.
We'll have a radar on our heads.
Put Kohli in the title of this, please.
Thank you so much to James Vince. Thank you so much to Barney Ronay for joining TGC once again. Thank you to you coats out there. Patreon.com/Great Cricketer for more hashtag RCDC Fridays, which is essentially what this has been. See you guys next week.